This episode of the Daily Brief podcast is brought to you by TiVo. We've been at the forefront of innovation since our inception, and our business solutions are no different. TiVo knows promos. Hi, I'm Paige Albiniak, Editorial Director of Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Today's episode takes us back to this year's Station Summit in Las Vegas. There, Valerie Stopp, president of NBC Universal-owned television stations, had what I thought was a refreshingly open and honest conversation with Promax BDA chair and NBC EVP Scott Chastain about what it means to be a leader in the business of television. Valerie and Scott talk about how she got her start in television back when she was growing up in Texas, how she learned everything there was to know about running television stations in small, medium, and finally large markets, and how knowing the art and science of marketing has helped her in her current position overseeing 30 NBC and Telemundo-owned stations. Here's Valerie talking to Scott.
Proud that I could say howdy.
Two Texans on the stage.
That's right. So speaking of Texans, you know, take us back to Tyler. You know, you got your started in your career and in college there and kind of worked your way through. Tell us how, you know, your career started and how, you know, it's changed over time to get to where you're at now.
So the kind of different thing about my career is I never meant to be in television. I grew up in the middle of Angelina National Forest in East Texas without television. And for those of you that are anywhere near my age, you remember that satellite television was in its infancy when I was growing up. And in rural areas, you had to have a dish about the size of this room in order to get television. So we lived on park property that wouldn't let you put a dish up. So we didn't get television where I lived and grew up. So I only watched television when I visited friends. So nothing in that made me ever think about a career in TV, but when I went to college, I had to pay for my education, and I was working three jobs, one of which that I was sure was going to get me killed. I was a nighttime clerk at a Holiday Inn on the edge of town, and I was 17, so I literally, this opening came up at a television station, entry-level position. I literally begged them to hire me. I literally said to them, I might be dead in a few weeks if you don't hire me. And it worked. They hired me. And that, so basically started entry-level in the traffic department and worked my way up. And I was in the small station the whole time I was going to the 4 years I was in college. It was my first year in college when I started. And when I, the 4 years when I graduated from college, I was a promotion producer and editor, and I was in charge of public affairs at the station. And I was getting into research. So at that time, there weren't very many women in management and television. So they were trying to encourage women to get into management. So I was going to leave the station to get my MBA, and they agreed to pay for my MBA if I would come back and start a research and marketing development program and stay at least a year. So I had just killed myself to pay for my college education because I was afraid to take out a loan. I was afraid to like owe money. So it sounded great to me to have my master's degree paid for. So I agreed and I went to Baylor for a year. And when I came back, I started a department, stayed exactly a year, hired my replacement, and took the same position in at KPRC in Houston, was there a couple of years, and then joined ABC at WPVI. So literally worked my way up, research and marketing development, and then, which was like new business development, at KPRC and WPVI. And then became the creative services director because my education was marketing and, you know, I had a good marketing background. Became the creative services director at WPVI for about, I think it was 4 years, and then became the general manager in Fresno. And my career is largely attributed to the fact I was willing to move to Fresno. Because what you definitely find now, and was less true then but still true, is, you know, people just aren't that mobile. And so getting people to move for jobs sometimes is really hard. And in my case, I was just newly married, and my husband started to look for a job in Fresno, and things were not looking good in Fresno for another marketing professional. So he actually went to work for the San Jose Mercury News in San Jose, and we commuted for the 4 years I was a general manager there. But I wouldn't trade the way my career went for anything, because I learned every area of a television station. So when I'm going from station to station and I'm helping these stations figure out how to solve problems and get better, I really understand the work involved. I understand, you know, the resources that are needed, and can actually hopefully help just because of my firm grounding in the business. And so I ran the Fresno station, ABC station, the Raleigh-Durham one, and KGO in San Francisco. So I ran a small, a medium, and a big market television station. And of course, now with our 30 stations, we have all sizes. And so they're, you know, it's different to work for stations at different levels and have different levels of resources available to you. So I feel like it gave me a really good grounding for the job that I have now.
So obviously you served a lot of roles within TV stations, but marketing being, you know, one of those centerpieces. Give us some like concrete examples as far as like how you feel marketing helps you in your job. Now you mentioned, you know, you're going out to the TV stations and you know, pinpointing various things that they could be working on. You know, focus on marketing just a little bit and how it helps.
Well, as you all know, it doesn't matter how good you are if nobody else knows how good you are. So marketing is really the center connecting point of a television station. The news department has to be good, they have to be really good, and they have to constantly be pushing themselves and improving and making the product as good as they possibly can. Sales has got to be doing the best job they can to sell that product. But to move the whole station forward, the marketing's got to be right. And when I was coming up in this business, a lot of the people in creative services departments were really good promo writers. They were good copywriters, and they were good editors. So they were good at the craft of creative. I think now people are getting more into the science of marketing, the more of the information education of marketing. And it obviously has evolved and is much more complicated now. So I think you're in a unique position as the head of marketing of a television station to really understand the station and the challenges of the station. So when you're looking at who can rise to be general managers of the stations, I feel like creative services directors are in really good shape to be general managers because they have that unique perspective of touching both sales and news and PR and you know, so many areas of the station. I think the thing that holds them back a little bit is not managing as many people as typically the VPOS or the news person has. But they have serious advantages over each of the news and the VPOS. Because if you run a newsroom, it's hard to get out of that newsroom and see what else is going on in the station. If you run sales, you're out of the building a lot. It's hard to stay really connected and understand news, where that marketing professional tends to be involved with and really understand both. So it can give you a really interesting, great background for it. But you have to really think about the things you're missing and fill in those gaps so that at the point that you pitch a general manager's job, you can get the person hiring comfortable with the pieces that you don't have.
So you touched on one of those aspects as far as what a brand director, if they aspire to be, you know, a general manager or a station manager, you know, one of the things they could do. What are some of the other things that they could do as far as ascending to that track?
I think the biggest thing that I see with any manager who's a department head getting to the next level, the bigger job, is they tend to be really good managing their people, and they create a good environment, especially marketing professionals. They want to have fun in their job. They want, you know, and their job should be fun. It really, really should be fun. So they tend to create fun, high energy, great departments, really support their people. But their peer-to-peer relationships sometimes are, they don't concentrate on them. They really see their priority as their team. And sometimes they're so impassioned about protecting their team that they have trouble taking that step back and saying, what's the right thing for the station overall? And how does our team connect to the bigger overall effort? And just some little examples of that are, creative is wildly important today, as all of you know, because you getting someone's attention is really, really hard. So creative really has to be excellent. So a lot of what you're doing in your job is trying to get the best possible creative out of your people. And so sometimes your people come up with really great, creative, fabulous ideas, but they don't fit the brand of the station. They're like the best, most creative, most wonderful thing, and everybody in the department really wants to do this great spot, and it has nothing to do with who you are as a station. So part of that growing as a manager is to not crush the person who has the great idea and the great, you know, wants to do the great spot, but help them to grow to understand that you've got to do the great spot, the great creative that reinforces this brand that you're trying to build over multiple years in a consistent way. So I think that's the big thing, is to make sure that you're not doing things for your own group that then is not the right thing for the station overall. And when you're in my position and you're picking a general manager, you want them to have really strong peer-to-peer relationships. You want them to really understand how hard it is to be a news director, how hard it is to be a sales manager, and to respect those roles. You don't want somebody who's very dismissive of, oh, the sales department does nothing but take people out to lunch all day. the news director thinks that we have all the resources in the world and is so demanding, and you want somebody that understands that just like your job is hard and has a lot of responsibility and keeps you crazy busy, so do those other department heads. And you also want someone who's curious enough to understand the departments they don't touch very often, so that they really do understand, if they don't have a head for technology, they still understand what's going on in the technology. I don't know how many general managers in my career I've seen end up losing their job because they weren't on top of something that was that was director of technology or chief engineer related. Because it's like their eyes glazed over once the chief engineer started talking. They were like, hey, yeah, it's fine. It's like, it's not fine, we went off the air. So you gotta have that curiosity to really try to understand the areas you don't know. So I think the biggest thing to understand is what got you to the job you have right now and made you good at the job you have right now is often not the thing that will make you successful in the next job. So you have to think about how you evolve and change yourself to be successful in the next job. And that typically is, you become successful, even as a creative services or brand director, you often become successful because you're very good at what you do, the actual work you produce. When you get to my level, I'm like the least important person in my division. If I don't come to work tomorrow, every newscast is still gonna happen at all my stations. There's no body of work that I do every day that shows up in our television stations. So what I have to do to be good at my job is to inspire all these people that work for me to do their best work. I don't go do the work for them. And that's the change you make as you go up the ladder. You stop doing the work yourself. You have to learn how to inspire, encourage other people to do their best work and keep things out of their way so that they don't have a lot of frustrations in their job, so that they can really do their best possible work and want to do their best possible work and want to work for you you know, you want the best people, the smartest people to work for you. So you have to change, you have to evolve as a leader versus a manager. A manager manages a process. A manager says, we've got to get 6 promos done. We're going to start this one this day, finish it that day. We're going to shoot this. We're going to edit that. A leader creates an environment for their team that allows their people to grow and do their absolute best work for their company.
And that part of the decision-making process, you know, in evolving into a leader as you're looking at, you know, a marketing director, a news director, a head of sales for a GM, dive a little bit deeper into sort of that decision-making process and what are the things that are going to really jump up in your mind as far as, you know, heading down that track and what you can actually have a conversation with them about.
So I think that any job you pitch, it really helps to understand how the person makes that decision for the job. And in the case of a general manager's job, it's multi-layered and it's complicated. Because when I'm trying to find the right general manager for one of our stations, I'm trying to find the right person to fit in that particular station. So I can have 5 people who any of those 5, and I'm lucky because I have really good people that work for me, and I have way more than 5 that would make excellent general managers today. I've got a huge group of department heads, all areas, that could be fabulous general managers today. So what I have to do is look at the particular station that has the opening, look at its strengths and weaknesses, and see which one of those fabulous people that I have can bring that particular station the furthest. So they've got to be, so that's the tough part about a GM job. You can be fabulous, great, perfect, wonderful, and still not be the right person for that particular station. And to kind of give you an example is, say you have a station that has a really great news director, but a brand new first time VPOS who has lots of promise and is going to be really good, but only been in their job a year. You're more likely to pick a candidate from sales who can help grow that VPOS. You're less likely to pick a news director when you've got a good solid news director there. So it becomes very complicated to get the right fit. Sometimes the market is just a really tough, weird market. So of our stations, I'd say our toughest markets out there are Miami and San Francisco, and then after Miami and San Francisco, probably LA. Those are tough markets. Viewership levels are low. They're wildly diverse, multiple languages spoken. So they're harder for a television station to do well. So you want to lean towards somebody that understands those markets. So you could have, the ideal candidate might just be someone who has never faced 30% Asian population that's in San Francisco that is a very different viewer from the African American or the white viewer in San Francisco. So there's things like that that also enter into the decision. What's their potential for understanding the market and therefore helping that station, you know, move forward in that market. So it's a complicated decision, and I think it's sometimes frustrating for people because they know they're ready for the job, and then the right fit sometimes doesn't exactly, you know, come along.
So you talked a little bit about, you know, sort of evolving, you know, your career. And in looking at that tape and in the setup, you've taken the stations division in an upward trajectory that is just fantastic. When you came into the job and sort of did sort of an analysis of here's where everything stands, you know, how did you set forth with, you know, how do we evolve this business? You know, how is this going to evolve? It's 2011, you know, all the platforms were coming online and everything, and you've got this group of really good television stations in various situations in their markets. You know, how did you set forth on that path of how do we evolve this to the next level?
So with everything that was going on in our industry at that time, it was very clear to me that for anybody to pay, in any business you're in right now, the internet has empowered the consumer in a way that they have never been empowered before. Everybody wants what they want, when they want it, exactly how they want it. and the internet is, in most cases, able to deliver that to them. So it's created a very demanding consumer. So there are some things about our business that aren't that consumer friendly, and linear television doesn't do that. Linear television doesn't give you exactly what you want at the moment that you want to watch it. So you've got to have reasons that people will come to you at a certain time, reasons that people will stay connected to you. And to me, that's original content. That is what we call Google-proof news, which basically is whatever you do, whatever story you do. We talk to our reporters all the time about you can be assigned the very same story that three other reporters in the market were assigned to that day. But at the end of the day, when you Google all those other stories that exist out there, we want you to have elements in your story that they didn't get, things that they didn't find. The other thing we want to do is develop newsrooms where we are actually breaking news and we are actually finding, you know, enterprising stories. For you to do that, you have to have a really well-functioning news department that's covering all the bases before it can actually have the ability to get people out there who actually can break stories and find stories. So in our case, it was getting the newsrooms in really good shape and at the same time trying to develop an enterprise journalism kind of feel throughout the newsroom that people know that they were going to be rewarded for being enterprising and actually breaking stories. So in order to jumpstart that in newsrooms that weren't as good as they could be at the time, we put investigative units in all of the stations. And so that immediately put seasoned journalists who really knew what they were doing in next to what had become newsrooms that had a whole lot of young, inexperienced reporters that needed to be grown and taught and see good examples at the same time. So it's like anything, you gotta fix the product first. So it was fixing the product. We had really good sales arms. The NBC sales was unbelievable. I was wildly impressed with it. So as this product got better and ratings went up, sales monetized it just amazingly well. And then once the product got right, it was fixing the marketing and the branding. I'm a big proponent of not advertising what isn't good yet. So we laid low until we actually were doing some good journalism. And then once we started doing things better and were a better station, we worked on the brand and evolving the brand and getting the message out, and then really started working on getting people consistent in their brand to really develop what their brand is and stay with it long term. And so now I've been with the division 6 years, and we have probably a handful of brands that are 4 years old, 4 or 5 years old, that have same brand but really evolved and grown. Other stations are earlier in that process. They've only had their brand 1 year or 2 years. Some of them are still figuring out what their brand is. But that's the next step, getting the word out and properly representing the brand. Yeah.
You talked about that, you know, the your job each day, you know, the newscast will go on that day if you're in the office or not. But talk a little bit about the decision-making process that you have with your stations that if it's a situation that, you know, making the right decision for the station versus making the right decision for a department. You talked a little bit about, you know, we're not going to market it just yet. We're not quite ready. Tell us a little bit about how you do that in your division.
So when I was offered the job of running the division, the reason I lean towards taking the job is because I worked for many years for Steve Burke's father, Dan Burke, and Tom Murphy, and they were the two men who started Capital Cities Broadcasting that then later bought ABC and became the ABC-owned stations. And I was 20-something years old when I joined that organization, so they really raised me to be the kind of manager that I am. And they that's really where I got my philosophy in management and station operation, was from the culture that they had built in those own stations. And they believed in the general managers running their own stations. They believed in hiring the best people, putting the best leadership teams together at a station, and letting that general manager run the station. So because Steve was Dan's son, I knew he had been raised hearing all those same lessons before, and he knew a lot about broadcasting. We had a really quick shorthand and could talk really immediately, like jump into a meaty conversation about the station, so it was clear he understood broadcasting. So what I told him was I needed to be in charge of the stations, which meant that we would have a great, fabulous relationship with the network, but the network couldn't tell the stations what to do. And that's both the Telemundo side and the NBC side. I want to have great, healthy, fabulous relationships with both of them, and we do. But often what's right for the network is not right for every station. Might be right for most stations, but it's often not right for every station. And at the end of the day, I wanted to have the authority to say, we've got a station that's not right for, and that I would be supported in that decision. And he agreed, and so I took the job. And it got tested very quickly, because before I was there, there was just certain shows you never preempted no matter what. Mm-hmm. And if you're WNBC and you got Lorne Michaels in the building, you got NBC News two floors away from you. There's a lot of corporate pressure to be careful about things like preempting. So what I really work with all my general managers about is being wildly respectful of preemptions, so that if we've got a CEO like Steve Burke and a boss like Mark Lazarus, who's willing to stand behind us and stand behind our decisions, then we need to be wildly respectful of that and only preempt when we know we know in our hearts it's the right thing to do. And then when we make that decision, to try to do it in a way that respects the network and doesn't insult them or cast a bad light on them, that just makes it about serving our community, not about disparaging anybody else. And I think our general managers are wildly respectful of that and really good about that. And so they do have the power. Mm-hmm. They do. Even if they disagree with me, they have the power. Yeah. If I think you're overreacting, it's really not that bad, or so-and-so, but they feel strongly about it, they do it.
Well, and I think one of the things that your division does well across all the different departments is that there is constant interactivity with the folks at the network. You know, the marketing folks have a relationship with people in sports, news with news. And so it's not just when the decision needs to be made, there's just ongoing dialogue. And I think that's really key.
And we talk to them immediately if we think there's a whiff of a problem, right? We immediately say, wow, this could be an issue in this market. And we talk together all the way through it until a decision is made. And then we talk about how this decision is going to be executed to cause the least harm for everybody. Right. And it's a partnership doing it. Mm-hmm. So the other side of the coin has been the people at the network has respected our decisions and not been upset with them.
So we've been talking like a 30,000 foot view of within the division. So, you know, obviously this is a marketing conference. There's, you know, the scores of ownership groups that are here, you know, 1,000+ people attending the conference. So kind of give your view overall of local broadcasting in general right now.
So when I hear people whine about local broadcasting, oh my God, it's so hard, it's so terrible, it's so whatever. I remind people that every business is hard right now. There is no such thing as an easy business. So if you want to leave broadcasting and go to an easy business, good luck. The internet has made everything more difficult, and it will. For all the reasons that it's wonderful for people and made people's lives easier, it's made it harder to stay relevant and good in your job. I don't care what your job is. I don't care if you grow lettuce. I don't care what you do. So We have challenges as local broadcasters, but we don't have that many more challenges than anybody else has. So whatever job you get, it is your job to look at what's happening, do your best job of judging what's coming at you from the future, and adjust to it. The thing I think, local broadcasting is, for one thing, is wildly healthy. Profit margins, making money, it's wildly healthy. So that's one good thing. Yes, viewership is down, but you know what? You can make a living with lower viewership. You can still make money with low ratings. You can still be successful with low ratings. Yes, you have to be everywhere now. You have to be on multiple platforms. You have to follow where your viewers go. You have to be smart about it, though. At the end of the day, it costs us a tremendous amount of money to provide local news in these markets, so we have to find some way to pay those bills. So you have to be smart about how you are able to monetize the different places that you put your content. The one thing the internet has not done well is local news. It is hard and it is expensive to do local news well. And every effort that has come into a local market to try to do local news through the internet only has not been successful. It's just really hard and expensive. We have that in our favor. It's interesting to me how often you watch movies, they're watching local news in movies. It happens all the time. In TV shows and in movies, it's New York One up in a New York scene. It's the local news somewhere. We still are relevant. We still are relevant and important. And we have to protect that, we have to reinforce that, and we have to grow that and evolve with what is an ever-changing world. And if you're waiting for the world to slow down or quit changing, sorry. In all my years of broadcasting, it hasn't happened. But in all my years of broadcasting, our demise has been predicted 6 or 7 times, so I am completely... You can't faze me with that anymore. We have continually managed to reinvent ourselves, and I believe that we will continue to do that.
So one more question before we open it up to the House for a couple of questions. You talked about the health of the industry and how it's going very well right now. There's a lot of mergers and acquisitions and things, you know, going on. What would your advice be or your perspective be in regards to marketing within those groups as the groups continue to merge and you've got groups that own, you know, potentially over 200 television stations? What's your feelings in regards to specifically marketing within those types of things, situations?
I think my overall advice always to people is to care about who you're employed by. And if you are employed by a company you don't respect, start looking for a job tomorrow. Get out there and find a company you respect. And work for people who share your values. With mergers and all the mergers, acquisitions, all the changes that are occurring, look at how they're structuring, how the companies are structuring themselves and what's important to them. When I took over at NBC, marketing was centralized and we decentralized it. Centralized marketing is such a bad idea. It's like, let's take the local... It's like, I have a great idea. Let's take the local out of local news. It'll be great. The marketing has to reflect the actual town and city that it's in. So I think you're less vulnerable because even if big companies say, okay, let's centralize our marketing, they're going to find out it's hard and expensive to centralize it. When NBC centralized it, they were spending, and I kid you not, more money than I spent putting creative services departments back in all of our stations. I saved money putting them back in all of our stations. So, and the reason is, think of all the elements the creative services departments create all day, every day. And think if that was coming out of a hub somewhere. It's an astronomically huge amount. And it has to be relevant to your community. So right now, if we threw up a reel of image promos from our stations, they don't look anything alike. We laugh all the time. We all love KXAS's promos. They're like have the most fabulous promos in the world. But they couldn't run in any other market. Not in any other market.
Storm Ranger wouldn't work in San Diego the way Gary does it.
No. Yeah. I mean, Gary literally has a, I think we've got a convoy spot. I mean, it's fabulous, it's wonderful, and I can't wait to open every promo I get from him. But it could no more air in New York or LA or Miami than anything. So I think that you're in a really good place. I just think you have to constantly reinforce that with your management and the value of being local and reflecting your community because you're there and you know it.
Amen. Very good. All right. I think we've got about 5 minutes or so left for questions from the audience. So David from Promax is in the aisle if you have a question. I think there's one in the back, Heather. Seem to know.
There. Hi there. I want to be you when I grow up. But in all seriousness, I'm currently a promotions manager for a mid-sized station, and I do want to be a general manager someday. What would you suggest as the next step for somebody who wants to be a general manager who has only been managing for a short time? Like, where do you think would be a good place to go from there?
So, I, of course, would never have admitted this when I was not even a promotion manager. I was just a promotions producer. I, at that point, was like, I could be a better general manager. I had my eyes on being a general manager when I was in an entry-level position. So there's nothing wrong with that. The key is to learn as much as you can about every other department and develop really strong relationships with the department heads of those departments and be willing to get involved in things outside of your circle just for the experience of understanding how they work and how they operate. The broader your knowledge base, the better. And then just education-wise and learning opportunity-wise for you, learn as much as you can about how people communicate. How reading people and understanding what people are actually saying to you versus what their words say is huge. The better you actually understand people, the better you can build an environment that will allow people to do their best work. Because every individual is different, and people want to please their bosses, and so people will smile at you and go, oh my God, that is so brilliant. That is so great. And then be like, oh my God, she's out of her mind. So I've gotten really good at reading the, oh my God, she's out of her mind, so that I know if someone's not sold on my idea and I need to back up and we need to talk it through again and see where we are. That to me is the skill that you really need, is to understand how people communicate, what all the nonverbal cues of a good conversation versus a bad one, and hone those management skills, because they're the ones that we get busy doing our day-to-day work and we forget to work on those. One thing that often happens with when you're considering a marketing lead as a general manager is you turn around and you find out they've never fired anybody. Now, I'm not suggesting you all go home and fire somebody. Let's be real clear on that point.
Valerie said I have to get rid of somebody.
Yes, Valerie said I had to go fire somebody right now. But if you're looking at somebody that's going to get a big management position, wow, you're kind of, it's a little tough to think they're going to have their first really awful conversation as a general manager. It also can be a little bit of a red flag if they've gotten that far in their career and never fired somebody, because there's nothing worse than firing somebody, nothing worse, and I've done it more times than I would like to admit, and it doesn't get any easier. If I had to tell somebody their job was ending today, it would be just as gut-wrenching and horrible as it was the first time I ever did it. But it's important to learn how to do that in the right way, in a way that doesn't denigrate the person that you're having to have this conversation with, and doesn't demonize them, and doesn't make them a bad person, that makes everybody understand what's happening when it's happening. And you really need a general manager to have that skill. You really need a general manager to know that. And you also need to know that it's hard to believe someone could be a manager for a lot of years and not have an employee that needed to go do something else. So does it mean they never addressed it? You know, does it mean they never... Part of, if I'm going to elevate someone to be a general manager, I want to look at who they've hired, how good they are, and can that department head go away on vacation and not get very many calls because they have such a good, solid group that they have empowered to handle things while they're gone. So you want to show those kinds of things, that you can put a group of people together that you, like me, you can not show up and it'll all happen. It'll all get done. So those are the things I think you need to think about.
Well, maybe to have time for just one quick question there in the back.
Hi, Valerie. Thank you for your wisdom and your time. I appreciate that. So I am in Honolulu, and
where it's right now, 80 degrees and sunny.
Yeah, it's every day. But three times this entire conference, I have not even been on the map. I'm not joking. It's sometimes they're like a speck, but they don't even put our words. So when you're talking about corporate and local, I'm local. Mm-hmm. We're nothing like any other market in the country. So, posing a question to you. We just had an enormous event. Have you heard of Hukulea? It's basically a ship that went around the world. And it came back to Honolulu, I think it was last weekend. We had the US Open tennis on our number one network. We did not preempt that for the biggest event of the year. What would you have done?
Well, I can tell you, sporting events are an interesting differentiation for things like that to me. So in a local market, if you have three or four stations and the other stations are going to cover something like that, and I get that it's a big deal and a big event, it's hard if you're the only one who has the sporting event that you know a group of people are going to want to watch and expect to see to not offer it. Okay. So in our cases, we jump through hoops to make sure that market can see that sporting event if we really think we have to preempt it. So we have a digital, a D2 channel, Cozy. So we'll use Cozy to put it on. Or we'll work with NBC Sports and they'll put it on the sports network. But sports are tough because you do have an impassioned base of people that are waiting to see it. And it gets kind of hard to make the argument to preempt it when you know there's three or four other stations that are going to cover whatever it is. If it's life-threatening weather, then all bets are off. You know, if it's something that's life-threatening, I don't care if you're in the middle of the Super Bowl, you got to protect people's life and limb. But if it's not and it's sports, I do think you have to wrestle more with taking away a sporting event.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, on that note, and now we definitely are over on time, but I wanted to thank you for being here and your insights and your time and your leadership for not just your division, but the industry as well. So thank you very much.
A big thanks to our friends at TiVo for sponsoring this week's episode of the Daily Brief podcast. TiVo's Promo Optimizer is a cloud-based tool that allocates and executes your promotional inventory across network brands. Check it out at business.tivo.com. TiVo knows promos. Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate LaKire-Marion and social media coordinator Christian Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at PaigeA, follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack, follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. Subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.